D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Hi, Trevor. How are you?
Great, Adam. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you so much for joining us, as always. So last week, I asked you about Ty Simpson, because your colleague, Dan Orlovsky, fueled the take machine all week last week by saying he thought that Ty Simpson was a better quarterback prospect than Fernando Mendoza. And one thing about Ty Simpson, he made, because it's past tense now, he made 15 career starts at Alabama. And there has been a lot of discussion over the years about quarterbacks with limited starting experience in college, because a lot of them have struggled. You've seen some successes, such as Cam Newton. Ryan Tannehill, I believe, had under 20 college starts, had a solid career. But by and large, those quarterbacks who did not have a lot of starting experience did not live up to the hype. So as it relates to Ty Simpson, Trevor, and generally speaking, are quarterbacks with limited college starts sort of sabotaging themselves by entering the NFL with little starting experience?
I think so. And the reason is that when you enter the NFL, you're going to get labeled. And if you are labeled as a guy who's not ready to play right now, it's really hard to lose that label, because coaches and, you know, general managers tend to stick with the label. So if you're a quarterback and you come in and they decide that you have limited starts, therefore you're not really the guy, and they start looking elsewhere, it's going to be really hard to overcome that. If you stay another year, you continue to develop, you've got a better chance of entering the league and establishing a label that will work for you instead of against you. And right now there's a track record of quarterbacks taken in the first round that had limited starts that didn't pan out in the NFL the way they were expected to. Trey Lance out of North Dakota State was one of them. San Francisco moved up in the first round to take him, and now I think he's still in Dallas, but he never made it in San Francisco. He only had one full season as a starter. Same way with Mitchell Trubisky, who's now just signed as a free agent with the Titans. And so I think Ty Simpson would have been better off staying in Alabama or moving to a different spot and getting another year under his belt, with the goal of giving himself the best chance of having the best possible label put on him by NFL teams when they see him perform in their training camp and their preseason.
Matt Bowen at ESPN.com had a story today ranking his favorite team fits for the top prospects in the NFL draft, and he landed on Ohio State linebacker Sonny Styles for the Tennessee Titans. If that were to be the selection by the Tennessee Titans, do you see Sonny Styles as a Fred Warner type for Robert Saleh the way he was in San Francisco?
Adam, that is exactly the comp that I think the Titans should be looking at. Warner was so good in San Francisco, in part because Warner's that good. He's athletic. He's got sideline to sideline range. He can cover. He can blitz. He can do it all. But what makes him great at San Francisco is that Robert Saleh's style of defensive line play, which is to say the defensive linemen don't just eat up blocks and then let linebackers flow. The defensive linemen in Saleh's system are told mostly to penetrate a single gap, get upfield, cause all the disruption you possibly can, and then any gaps that happen to open up, the linebackers can clean up. And so that's what Fred Warner does so well. You know, he's got the instincts to be able to see what the defensive line is doing, where the gaps might be opening up necessarily because of the penetration upfield, and how to fill into those gaps really, really well. So all those combinations are what make Fred Warner so great. Now you look at Sonny Styles, the Ohio State linebacker that you referenced. He's bigger than Fred Warner. He might even be faster. I mean, he's 6'5", about 240, and he runs in the mid-4.4s. He's got wide receiver speed as a 240-pound linebacker, for goodness sake. And he used to be a safety. So now moving into the middle linebacker position, or off-ball linebacker, for Ohio State, he's demonstrating all of the same capabilities of Fred Warner, but he brings more pop. He's more physical than Warner, at least he was in college. And he's got the same style of defensive line play in front of him that will allow him to maximize all of that. Now, it might take him a year or two to kind of continue to grow into the position because he did move from safety to linebacker. But I think that for the Titans, he would be a phenomenal fit because of what Fred Warner did for Robert Saleh in San Francisco.
We'll talk with Trevor Maddich, ESPN analyst for both college football and the NFL. Now, Trevor, we've heard a lot about, you know, hey, listen, you draft that top guy, that rush in, and you can go get you a running back later on. And I understand that because it has been true as far as going to get a running back in later rounds and them still being productive. If indeed the Titans chooses to draft Jeremiah Love, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, what guy could they get in the second round that will still be there when you're talking about a rush in or someone that can get to the quarterback?
Well, you're looking at Height, the other rush end for Texas Tech that played opposite David Bailey, who's getting all the attention right now. He's only about 240 pounds, so he's smaller than Bailey. He's not big enough to be a full-time outside linebacker kind of guy. But if you're outside of that first round, you're judging him by a different standard. And so he's the kind of a guy that has the ability to have quick twitch rushing off the edge, especially for that wide nine position where the defensive end doesn't line up right over or just outside the tight end or the tackle, but rather he'll go outside a couple of yards and creates a ton of space for that tackle to have to cover in order to get out to cut him off on that angle. Well, this is the kind of a player that's got the speed to be able to be a nightmare for tackles trying to get out there into all that space. So he's got some limitations as far as a three-down player is concerned, but from a standpoint of just pure pass rush specialist that could be taken at the top of the first or second round, he's the guy that they should be looking at.
Now, how about a guy like Akeem Mezidore, who was the bookend with Bain Jr.? Do you think he will be gone by then?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think he will be gone. He probably isn't quite as gifted as Bain, but he was every bit as productive. He's got a motor that never stops. He's got every pass rush move in the book, and he can do a lot of things for you, especially if you consider him taking in the top of the second round instead of in the first round. Now you're judging him by that different standard. Now, he is like 26 years old or so. So he's an older guy. And so he'll get into his 30s a lot quicker in his NFL tenure than anybody else. But again, if you're not taking him in the first round, then it's a different standard. And he's another guy that they should be looking at if he does drop out of the first.
Now, they're having the owners meeting as we speak. I think it's still going on. And one of the big topics is the 18th game. Do you think that get done sooner rather than later?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it does, because everybody makes more money, right? And money rules everything. The owners would make more money. The players would also get an extra game check. I worry about two things. First is how they would make sure that they take care of the players physically. Because right now they've got that silly rule where you've got, six or seven guys that are on the active roster, but they're inactive every week. Those guys need to be made active players. They're getting paid anyway. It won't cost the owners any more to do that. But they need to be made active so that you can have more depth pieces to rotate in. And maybe you expand the roster from 53 to 57 or something like that so that you can rotate more guys in. That might seem unpalatable to some people, but you can't just keep going past 17 to 18 and to expect the guys to not be injured late in the season. More injured than they already are. And think of it this way, that the owners don't really care if the players get injured. Mm-hmm. What they do care about is that the product is good. And if you've got guys that are more banged up, more key starters that are out because of injury, when you get into the playoffs, then the playoffs aren't as good a product as they would be, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's something that they'd have to deal with. Another thing is, I hate it that they went from 4 to 3 preseason games. And if they go to 18 regular season games, might they go to 2 preseason games? Well, that's fine for the 10-year veteran that doesn't need to play in those games, but it's terrible for your depth pieces that get their game experience for the most part in those games. Your backup quarterback, who might not play all season, but if he does need to play, it's those preseason games that give him his game style reps. And if going to 18 means they cut another preseason game out, I think that's bad for the league in terms of the product on the field as well.
Do you think that we'll ever get to a point where there's no preseason, where they're trying to get all 20 games?
No, I think if they do that, Derek, they're going to completely cut off the ability to develop players.
Yeah.
And in terms of guys that would get cut, but for how well they do in preseason. I mean, there are guys that make the bottom of the roster every year that nobody expected to make the roster, but when they got into the game, they really flash. And especially on special teams, because that's where those guys tend to hang on. And some of those guys end up being core special teamers or better over the course of careers that never would have happened had it not been for their opportunity in the preseason. And then go back to quarterback, because this is a quarterback league with the changes in the rules that allow more advantages in the passing game, more protection for the quarterback. It's a quarterback league, and yet quarterbacks very often don't play all 17 games. And you've got to get the backup quarterback ready. And if those guys aren't ready to play, and they go in because they necessarily have to because of injuries to the starter, which happens all the time, either long-term injuries or just short injuries to keep them out for a game or two or three, then the product on the field goes way, way down. And for the NFL owners, this is a TV show. They need the entertainment to be good. And if the word among the fans is that the quality of quarterback play drops off the cliff if the starter gets hurt, it doesn't help the owners. And I think their pocketbook would necessitate keeping enough preseason available to develop those guys.
Trevor Maddux is with us, ESPN, talking football with him. Trevor, Adam brought up something earlier when we were kicking around, what do you get if you draft Jeremiah Love? He brought up, you know, just sort of a nostalgic point. You think back some great quarterback running back tandems. There used to be a lot more of them because of the feature of the tailback back in the day that doesn't exist as much now. But, you know, you think about, Derek has brought up Steve McNair, Eddie George, drafted about a year apart or so. And that was what you built your whole identity around for a long, long time. It turned out so well. Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, that type of thing. Do you think there's value in that from a football standpoint? And do you think an owner like an Amy Adams Strunk could be influenced by that?
Yeah, I think that she could be influenced by that, but I hope she isn't. I think Adam makes a great point that those great quarterback, running back combinations tended to lead to a great team. And I can see that being the case with Cam Ward and potentially Jeremiah Love. But overall, they'd have to build the rest of the team around them as well. I hope that Amy Adams Strunk does not get caught up in the idea of other great QB running back tandems and want to do that here, and that's why she might influence that pick. That pick needs to be made because it's best for the team right now. But when you look at combinations like that, I mean, just look at, you know, Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith, for goodness sake. And look how they made each other better. Troy Aikman was able to stretch the field. That kept safeties away from the line of scrimmage. That helped Emmitt. Emmitt was able to pound the ball and finish games, which helped Troy Aikman from having to drop back in the pocket and desperately throw in catch-up mode. And he's able to protect and to catch passes, and all those things made the quarterback better. And so, you know, it's a good combination. It's a good idea, and I really like it. And I am firmly on the D-Mace train when it comes to Jeremiah Love. If they take him, I will be so happy. I'll just be doing the happy dance.
Trevor, last one for you. I see sort of the motivation. It's clearly the league is trying to intimidate the officials and saying, you know, if we got to go to replacements, we're already laying the groundwork, we're already identifying people, and we've got these replay situations that are going to help them more get by, creating some leverage. But I want to ask about a philosophical thing that I think you could apply to any sport, and that is the idea of sort of a eye-in-the-sky, centralized situation where the home office in New York or wherever it is
can have more of an influence on a game, where, in other words, they're watching closely and they can signal to the refs on the field, hey, you missed something here. There needs to be a flag for this, or that wasn't roughing the passer. That appears to be what they're moving towards in football. Do you like that?
I don't love it, but I like the fact that they are now talking about making, you know, that one big obvious mistake that everybody saw that an official made that could affect the game, that they can buzz in from New York and say, hey, you got to take another look at this. And I think that's right. If somebody misses something, it's kind of in the same category. But the problem is sheer mission creep. If that becomes to where they're going to start making pass interference calls that are kind of touch and go, hit and miss, or a holding call that could be called or could not be called, or a roughing the passer call that is a close call and it could have gone either way, and you keep getting calls from New York, I think then you'll cause a lot of damage. But there have been, in recent years, some egregious blown calls by officials on scoring plays and on big plays that would be good if somebody could step in and say, hey, you really blew that. And the thing is, an official can make that terrible call, then they can look up at the screen and the replay and see how bad it was. And right now, the official can't say, oops, my bad, I just took another look at it, I totally missed that. And it has to stand, unless the replay people are able to stop it. But there's so many calls, like pass interference, that replay can't get involved with. And so those kinds of massive, egregious misses are the ones that if the league can come in and stay disciplined and only calling those, it would really help. It would really help the game, because here's part of the problem. Not only does it affect the game, but it feeds conspiracy theories. There are a lot of fans out there that believe that the NFL has its thumb on the scale and the NFL is influencing which teams win and which quarterbacks are better protected by what they tell officials to do and what they tell officials to turn a blind eye to. I don't believe that that happens. But when terrible calls are made and they're not corrected and everybody can see it, it just feeds into those theories. And once again, that doesn't help the NFL's concept of protecting the shield and putting on a good quality, fair, perceived or perception of competition on the field. So I think it will help as long as they don't do mission creep and get into smaller calls.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace. Vin Gendonicki joins us every Tuesday and is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, as always, a pleasure. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Adam.
615-737-1025. We'll react to what Trevor had to say. Plus, a social media post that emerged last night involving a prominent Nashville athlete that has people talking. We'll discuss that coming up next as well. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.